Thanks, Rob. It's an honor to be here. I actually only heard about this show a couple of months ago. We have the intention of going out to the Rocky Mountain Pinball Show again. Weren't really considering Chicago this year, but we decided to throw a couple finishing touches on the machine and bring it out. So a little history here. My name's Jeff Matthews. My day job is software mostly, embedded systems design. I brought with me Lee Taylor. He's a guy I've known for quite a number of years. Worked with him professionally. He flew in from Boston, I flew in from Colorado. So let's talk real quickly. I've got probably about four slides here, and then we're just gonna do a slideshow, mostly pictures about the machine, and then I'll sort of step through what we've done. So who are we? Well, a couple software guys, mainly. We're interested in pinball. The last couple years...
This is making you more nervous.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Jim.
That's nice. That's what I need, Jim. So custom pinball, what is custom pinball? We'll talk a little bit about that. We'll talk about what the project goals were on this machine, what our inspiration was. The machine that we brought today is called Cabinet Fever. We built cabinet playfield control boards and software for it. A little Q&A afterwards, hopefully we'll have some time. Hopefully I don't run through this too quick or too slowly. And there's a trophy tournament on the machine. Here's the trophy. It's not very big, just like the machine. We're going to end the tournament at 5 p.m. Saturday, and we're going to present the trophy at the banquet. So what's custom pinball? Well, in the case of Cabin Fever, artwork is a pretty big one here for custom pinball. In case of Cabin Fever, we've got custom plastics, custom cabinet, and a custom back glass. A lot of times you'll see people sand down play fields and replace cabinet artwork or back glasses. Everything's new on this machine, so we had to go through all that. We've also got a new play field design. It's not perfect. This is our first one. If you guys have played it, it's upstairs. Have a shot at it. But we put as much time and energy as we could find. The machine took about 6 months to build from ground zero. So it's, you know, placement of lamps, placements of a toy. It's got one big toy, the bear head. Placement of shots, inserts of lamps. It's a custom cabinet. One of the things we wanted to do here was make it obvious that we'd come up with a machine from scratch. And one of the things that plays into that is that the machine is 3/4 scale. So it's got a custom cabinet, we built that from scratch. Custom play field, custom black back box. So in the case of Cabin Fever, the EM assemblies are not custom for the most part. So we've got a standard land loader. I'll show you guys a picture of that. Maybe you could, a little trivia there. What machine is the land loader from? It's probably not too obvious. Pop bumpers, flipper assemblies, all that's just sort of off-the-shelf brand-new parts. We tried to use as many brand-new parts as we could. Almost everything on the machine is new, not used. Mechanical assemblies. So we'll get into this a little bit later, but for the most part, the legs are new, the coin door is new, standard parts. Lane guides are all custom fabricated, spinners custom fabricated. Electronic control system. A couple of people saw the machine during the setup and asked, they didn't ask. They said, I've been working on pinball machines for 20 years and I've never seen a control system like that. What is it? We'll get into that a little bit. And all new custom software. It's a new control system, so we wrote all the software for it. Lee Taylor actually took the pretty good first swag at that. I think we wrote it over what?
2 days.
2 days? So it's kind of our profession, so we're pretty proficient with it. So project goals and inspiration. It's a pinball for kids. I've got a couple of young daughters, and they love to play the machines that we've got in the house. And they're too big for them, so we figured we need to build a machine, use some of our skills that we've got, get some people together, and really help design something. Maybe it would be a fun project, and it was enormously fun to build a machine. And it would be well suited for the kids because we'll make it the right size for them. So, what goes into that is 3/4 wide body, actually. It's based on Gottlieb Black Hole. It's actually a little bit wider than the scale for 3/4 Gottlieb at 19 inches wide. I think it works out okay. It keeps it from being a little bit skinny. Theme and toys, so we try to make that suitable for kids. Obvious rule set, right? The machine is for kids. Easy shots, that's sort of debatable. My kids are a lot better at the game than I am. I think it's because they hit the flippers really quickly. I tend to shoot for the ramp, the spinner lane, and I can't hit it. In fact, a lot of the lane guide right next to the spinner is pretty well dented now because I make all these shots right into the metal, and they can somehow just get it to go right to the spinner. So we wanted this machine to be nostalgic and authentic. That was a preliminary design goal. And what a lot of that meant was we wanted it to be wood and we wanted it to have a full-size steel ball. We wanted that effect, that feel that you can get from real inserts, real incandescent lamps, real wood, and a real steel ball. I think we achieved that. If you're in a quiet room with the machine, you can really hear that ball rolling around in the wood. So, of course, powerful, real, full-size EM assemblies. We can't make everything custom on this machine, so we used a lot of full-size pop bumpers, flipper assemblies, that sort of thing. Because we have a pretty big local pinball arcade in town, in Lyons, Colorado. We had sort of this idea that maybe at some point we'd take this machine and put it into service. So we put a real coin door on it, we put a real lock bar on it. We wanted to be able to use it at shows and make it pretty robust. I don't think anything's gone wrong with it at the show, so we're pretty pleased. Nobody's, broken in the coin door yet. So. It's got real money in it. So standard serviceable parts, right? So we didn't want to get into a situation where if we had this thing on location, somebody would come back and say, well, we don't want to work on this machine because it's not a real pinball machine. And we think we succeeded there. So hit the... So now we're going to transition into the slideshow part. We're going to look at some of the insides of this machine. So we live in Lyons, Colorado. We moved there about 2 years ago. We didn't know at the time that Lyons, Colorado only has 1,600 people and about 140 pinball machines. So it's about one pinball machine per 10 people. So it didn't take me long to find the arcade in town. So we like to joke it's the world headquarters for DIY pinball. So here's our inspiration. This is my daughter Molly. She's about 4 now, I think. 3 maybe at the time we took this picture. We were playing around, well, what would be the height and about the size of the playfield if we did a 3/4 scale? This is kind of what we saw. She's in the kitchen, she's in her jammies. So how do you get from that to this? This is the completed machine that we see out on the floor today. I'll try and take you through it. So where did the artwork on the cabinet come from, huh? Take a look at that and then take a look at the machine. Yeah, that was a sudden inspiration I had there. So here was one of the sketches. You could see I kind of punted on, well, what is the playfield going to look like for this machine? I actually did that later on. First thing was the cabinet here. And I didn't really, I'm not very good working with metal, so I decided, hey, I'll put some table legs on this thing. If anybody's seen, well, you'll see a couple more of the pictures with the table legs on it, but there were some complaints on RGP about the legs, so we ended up changing the legs. I think it looks a lot better with real legs on it. Here's a mock-up of the playfield. I use computers all day at work, so when I'm at home and I play pinball and I think about pinball, I tend to do things full scale on paper. I'm not a big fan of AutoCAD. So here's our first round of parts. When these showed up from, I think we ordered these from, well, I think this represents a bunch of vendors. So one of the things that we went through was we started calling people and asking, how do we get new assemblies? And everybody said, what are you talking about? That's really hard to do, it turns out. Some of the things you don't see on the machine are the things that you can't get new, like drop targets. So this is our first round of parts. This is, you can see there's an EM bell here. You'll hear that a lot in the game, since we don't have the soundboard in it yet. And a real knocker, a real flipper assembly. As you see, there's four here, but we ended up, the machine's small, we only ended up putting two flippers on the machine. And this is a kid's flashlight. You might recognize the head here is sort of our main toy. It's pretty robust. You can hit that thing in the head with the ball a lot. It hasn't broken yet, so. So here's my wood. One of my hobbies is woodworking. So here's part of my workshop. This is, I think, one of the first cuts I did to start out on the cabinet. Got a real great table saw. So it makes this kind of stuff pretty easy for me. And this is a relatively cheap router table. What we're doing here is we're cutting some of the joinery for the cabinet. Specifically, what we're trying to do here is put what's called a 45-degree lock miter, which is something that bolts on my black hole anyway, and that's exactly where I copied this from. It makes a really strong joint. So here's sort of early on, this is probably January or February, middle of winter, so I'm hanging out in the basement working on this pinball machine. So there's those legs I was talking about. You can see, it also took me a while to figure out, hey, maybe I should put a coin door on this thing, right? Originally, there was a little bit of artwork and the start button. I think the coin door, because we used a relatively full-size coin door, we ended up moving the start button and running out of room. And it turns out the tightest part of the pinball machine is up the front where the coin door is, because everything has to happen up there. You've got the shooter, you've got the coin door, and you've got the flipper controls, everything's up there. So, foolishly, I called around for a while and asked people, does anybody have any insert templates that I can use with a router so I can cut my own play field? And that didn't work very well. So I ended up making my own template guides. A lot of work went into routing out the play field by hand. These are some of the test cuts. That was a big learning experience. There were a lot of really So here it looks like, you know, I've just starting to work finally. Sort of hand rounding the thing. This is it about 80% complete. What you see missing there is the pop bumpers, because those weren't really routed. So here it is all routed. The other thing we did with the playfield was we cut what's it called? Sort of a shooter lane alignment groove. I don't know what the official pinball term is for that thing. Does anybody know? The shooter groove. So we ended up routing a shooter groove into this thing. You can see it there. Also the bearhead capture holes in and the two pop bumper So we're gonna do a link. That was right before painting, so I think I took that last photo right on the way as we were going to the artist. We work with a couple artists in the Denver area on this mission. If you look at it, probably won't take you long to figure out there was a different artist for the playfield than there was for the back glass. And the reason for that was the artist that worked on the playfield wasn't very skilled and didn't really want to take on the challenge of the back glass. But we were already behind another deadline, so we had to get the playfield knocked out. And this looks like after I put more than a few too many layers of poly on. So what do you do after that? Well, you start mounting things. Looks like we got lamps, pop bumpers, flipper assemblies, lane loader. Some of the more interesting things aren't on yet because we hadn't figured them out yet. Then it was time to come up with the back box. What we ended up doing was sort of fusing a bunch of different eras to make a back box that was easy to construct and sort of worked easily and didn't take a lot of mechanical assembly to get it to work. So we used sort of a 90s style back box lock on a face frame that fits on top of the cabinet. And the glass slides up through the top, so the lock actually holds it down. It doesn't hold it from coming out forward like on a 90s style. And so it's kind of a fusion of a bunch of different eras. So there's a machine in August of 06. Still got the table legs on it. No back glass yet. That's actually acrylic in the back. We didn't end up using that. Well, I guess we ended up using that for the first back glass, but not the one we see on it now. So, no used parts, right? These are all new transformers, rectifiers. This was sort of our own creation here for the high current, unregulated power supply. Standard tilt bob. No accelerometer to cheat on tilt sensors on this machine. So wire up. I think we were on the Stern tour and if I recall they said they used half a mile of wire. I thought that was pretty interesting because we only used about 800 feet. And we were doing what's called home run wiring. So there's no switch matrix on this machine. Everything goes all the way back to the control board. The machine is only 3/4 scale, and I think it has about 10 high current outputs and 36 switches and 40-something lamps. If you guys are really interested in the stats, then email me, and then the email address is on the machine, and I think we're also going to take time tonight at 5 to 6 maybe and hang out by the machine in case anybody wants to come by and talk and look at the machine more closely. So come by at that time and we'll talk about specifics. So the light board folds down. So once you pull the back glass out through the top, you can see that this is our first back glass here. Once you pull that out and up, then you can pull the light board down, and then you have access to the controller. The thing that's interesting about the controller, to me, is if you look at any of the modern machines, they're about 2 square feet, and this machine does almost everything other than sound right now, and only about 4-inch by 12-inch square area. So I'm not sure exactly what's going on, but I can tell you that we have no heat sinks anywhere on the machine because we don't need them. So maybe that's worth some more review. So here's the control board. So one of the things, I'm going to get a little bit technical now because I'm going to get into the control board. So it's kind of the heart of the machine. It was, for us, Lee and I, and some other people, sort of the heart and where kind of our interest lied actually in the pinball machine. Since we're not artists, you know. So to me, the interesting thing about the control board is it has one main microprocessor that sits right in the middle. We've got a bunch of what are called Euro-style plug connectors. Unfortunately, they're not very inexpensive. I think there's about 10 microprocessors on the whole machine. 9 of them are here. So there's one that runs all the game code, and then 8 on this board that run all the I.O. So basically a giant I.O. board. So So how do you get a board like that? Well, the first thing you do is you lay out a schematic for it. I'm not going to get into details. Second thing is, once you have the schematic, you can do a board layout. Then you farm the board layout to a PCB house, and you get back a board. So this is actually the back side of the board. It's a lot of ground plane on this board to keep noise down. Eventually, you wind up with PCB. Let me go back another couple slides here. So once you get your board layout, you get back from the board house something that looks like this, but it's empty. We should have brought one to the show. Maybe we'll take it out to Rocky Mountain and we'll. And I think it took me about 4 hours to solder all the parts on this. There's a lot of SMT components on a board like this. Once we had very few problems with the board, which was great. I think there was one or two traces that were messed up. So once it's populated, you can, you know, wire it up. That's kind of what it looks like, wired up. Machine is not terribly convenient to assemble. We found that out. We kind of knew that was going to happen because there aren't any other connectors on the machine other than these. So what that means is when you take the head off, you have to plug in everything and pull it through a little hole in the bottom. So we'll probably address that on the next one. So on the left-hand side of the board, we've got high current outputs. I think white here, these are all larger gauge wires for solenoids. All the orange is lamp. These are all MOSFETs. They can run, so I think, 60 volts on the big ones, 30 amps. They don't get warm at all. Everything on the board is sync. So the interesting thing about the board, I think, compared to most other pinball machines is it's all low voltage. There isn't any high voltage at all on the board. The machine itself routes all the high voltage. These parts don't care about what they're talking to on the other side, so you could exchange a lamp and a solenoid if you wanted to. It doesn't matter. As long as it's below either 30 or 60 volts, depending on what connectors you plugged into. Let me say one more thing about these MOSFETs too. So the MOSFETs are logic level, and that means they can talk directly to a micro. There aren't any intermediate parts. That saves a lot of board space. So this is the input side. Everything that's wired red on the machine is a switch. There's a lot of filtering here to filter out noise. That's all I'll say about it. So here's the display board. This is the 10th microcontroller on the machine. So there's actually a bus that goes between the control board and the display board and our soundboard, which isn't plugged in yet. So we can send sound commands down to the soundboard. We can send display commands down to the display board. The only thing that we do is send updates to the display. So unlike a normal display controller that you see on a pinball machine where the microcontroller is constantly sending commands out to the display telling it what to do the whole time, we only send updates when we want to change the display. It's that micro that handles what's called multiplexing between all the segments. So here's the machine September 06. It's got a lot of what we see on it today. It's got the old machine, the old legs on it. I don't think we have a real apron yet. This is just cardboard kind of hanging off for the apron. So here's a mock-up on the bear head. This is the primary toy on the machine. It's controlled by a hobby servo. It seemed like a pretty good fit for a pinball machine. I'm not sure why we don't see more hobby servos on pinballs. They're pretty inexpensive and they're mass-produced. And they give you position feedback so you can figure out how far open this head is. If you look at something like a Twilight Zone where that clock is filled with optos and gears, it seems like they could have done a slightly more robust design with the hobby servo. I'm not sure why they don't do that kind of thing. So here's the final, so that last thing we saw was the prototype for the bear. This is how it actually looks on the machine. One of the things that we've done here is we've put in from an RC mechanism, I think this is used on gas, 8th scale cars. The pin comes through with springs on either side so that it can jam the head down to the play field but not stress out any of the arms. So it's springed on both sides. So here's the lane loader. We talked about this earlier. Does anybody know what that actually is? It's not usually a lane loader.
So
it's a knocker.
No, it's not a knocker. It's this is actually a from a monster bash. Does anybody know now? And it's just a ball kick out from Monster Bash. So you notice we have no trough. So it kind of works a little bit more like an EM style, where the ball comes in, hits the switch, we detect that, and we knock it out if we've got more balls to play or if you're starting anew. Some of the tweaks we did to this actually was we pulled some of the windings out, we pulled the spring off, because we're having some trouble getting it to go as hard as we'd like it to go. But so lockdown. This machine is only 19 inches wide, and we didn't really feel like messing around trying to make a real lockdown mechanism for the machine that's 19 inches wide. So what we did was we ended up using this assembly. I forget exactly what it's called. It's from McMaster, and it basically holds down into the lock bar to keep it locked down. It seems to work well. So the rails, unfortunately we had to fab rails for this machine. The 3/4 scale led to the decision that we'd make the cabinet from 1/2 inch ply. We didn't realize what a bad idea that was until we got pretty far down the line. It led to all sorts of oddities about how everything, including rails, expect that space from there to there to be 3/4 inch wide. The shooter expects it to be 3/4 inch wide. A lot of the playfield elements expect the playfield to be 3/4 inch. There's a lot of funny things that we had to do. So we ended up fabbing aluminum rails, polishing them up, and then using Data East lane glass glides and trimming them to 1/2 inch. A lot of extra work. So where do you get an apron for a 19 inch wide machine? Well, my basement. There it is. I think I ground that thing out with a steel cutting wheel. Yeah, you can see the 90-angle wheel grinder. And for some of my first metal work, I thought this thing came out pretty good. I bent this thing up. That's, I think, 16-gauge steel, and then we ended up just painting that and throwing the cards on it. So this is the other half of my basement. Now, we actually have access to a machine shop, which helped us out to fabricate some of the stuff that we don't have any part in, like welding and CNC. So that is where we got the spinner. So we ended up fabbing spinners for this machine. This is, I think, we call this Spinner 3.0. I forget how many we actually put on the machine, but this is the one that we see on the machine today. It's all, plate aluminum with, I think, number 2 screws and then a groove to help hold the bar so it doesn't spin on the bar. And we threw a couple stickers on that. So here it is together. I see interesting points about the spinner arm. It's got a little magnet and a Hall sensor, and that's kind of all it is. There's no mechanical switch on it anywhere. It seems to work really well. If you lube it up, that thing spins forever. It's kind of a joke sometimes how long that thing spins. The machine's for kids. They like to see it spin. So the machine is 3/4 scale. It's a lot shorter. I forget exactly how high it comes off the ground. But when we got all the complaints about the legs, we started to think about real legs and what we're going to do. Are we going to fab legs or just take legs that already exist and cut 5 inches out of the foot? And that's what's on the machine now. Now, here's where I think we went a little bit over the top here, but I wanted the scale to look correct between the top of the machine and the bottom of the machine. And what that meant was we ended up reprofiling the top of the leg so that this wouldn't come up too high of the machine, so that the scale would look correct. We didn't move the holes. We just changed this profile and moved it down about 2 inches. Nothing I could do in my basement. That's what the machine shop was about. We ended up taking, I think it was a Gottlieb block bar, and doing the same sort of thing that we did to the leg. We chopped a big chunk out of it, rewelded it on the back. You can barely even tell if you look at the machine. So our second artist helped us with the back glass. This is one of the first cuts on what the back glass would look like. It's hard to find an artist who's familiar with fabricating back glass. I can't believe how much sort of back and forth there was about, this is what we want to do and this is why. One of the examples is the tilt. I didn't want the tilt to actually be visible on the back glass until the lamp came on behind it, right? So, you know, here's a light mask. You can see that there's things like the light in the window of the cabin, game over and tilt. So the difference between what we see on the machine now and what we saw here is that tilt should only be visible in the light mask, but not on the artwork. And that's what we see upstairs. So there's the single player game, single ball, single display, all the backlighting for all those various elements on the back glass. There's a character set. We've got a little beaver there with an iPod. He's right near the log jam. It's kind of a dumb joke. The artist came up with that. I'm not going to take any credit or blame. The bear head has a big plastic around it with arms on it. That was kind of my idea. The funny thing about it is we've only recently put the plastics on that actually have art. And when we did that, we experienced a couple of strange problems. One of them was it's pretty hard to see the targets that say BEAR now because of the left arm. And that wasn't obvious until we actually put the artwork on. It was a little bit too late at that point. So. There's definitely a lot of things that you learn about pinball by building a machine. Dead spots for balls and placement of targets. But we might get to another slide or if you guys come up and talk about the machine, but there's probably some more stuff to talk about there. So plastics, it was interesting to go on the Stern tour and take a look at how they were doing plastics. You see, they all come in one big sheet. The Stern's kind of an assembly house. They've farmed out the plastics and they come to them pre-cut all on a big sheet. I had a big sheet and then I cut it all up and then gave it to the artist. And part of that was because we didn't have the plastics planned out well enough that we could farm that out to somebody. So we ended up making prototypes, fitting those to the machine, cutting plastics, going back and forth probably about 4 or 5 times until we got the plastics perfect, and then handing those to the artist. So this is a giant sheet of polycarb. I think it's 3/16 thick. And then sort of freehand routed this thing out. I decided to use polycarb instead of acrylic because it's real tough, and I figured if people are making protection washers out of polycarb, why don't I just make all the plastics out of polycarb and it'll be indestructible. So there's a trophy. Rob asked me to sign it as the designer. If anybody's wondering about that. That's about all we've got. Maybe some time for some Q&A. Does anybody have any questions?
Can you legally mass produce this thing, or can you only make one?
I can do whatever I want. I own the entire design.
Being a kiddie game, you contacted me and I downloaded that video clip on your website. What's the website again?
We have a couple websites. One of them is DIYpinball.com.
Okay, you contacted me about this, and what I found interesting was This would be great in a, let's say, not Chuck E. Cheese, but let's say a pizza kitty place, or, you know, maybe a miniature golf place that kids would play.
Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons that we bought it was to get our kids in the pinball before they're big enough to play the full size. So
perhaps it could be mass produced. I know people who would buy it.
Yeah, we aren't really geared to do any kind of mass production, nor are we really interested in the mass production, because there's a lot of things that are make things complicated. And I think we'd rather do more expensive custom machines than we would do mass-produced machines.
Yeah. We're fortunate to have our audience, Matt Coriel. Matt, will stand up here. Matt's going to be speaking tonight at the Fireside Chat about Cactus Canyon. He's one of the designers. But Matt, give me your two cents of what you think these guys did.
It's kind of fun to look at. It's a lot of fun to look at. That's how I got involved too. And it's kind of neat to see what you guys have done. You focus a lot on technical stuff. I focused on non-technical stuff, making the playfield work, which was really challenging. It's just kind of neat to see two different approaches. But it's really neat to see the energy you guys put into putting the bed system together and figuring out all the stuff that goes into making it into a full product based model.
Yeah. So what he's saying is perhaps you guys can get together.
That's exactly what I was saying. I wish we would have talked earlier.
Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
Question to the banker?
Yeah, I'm just going to ask. You and I talked briefly yesterday. You mentioned that you shipped off a board to the PCB
right.
board house. So I think that it would probably be a high cost to produce just one, but much cheaper to produce X amount. Are you planning on making some of the things that are cost-effective and mass-produced available for sale?
Yeah, that's a really good question. One of the reasons that we're out here is to get a feel for what you guys are interested in, and if you want to get together with us in any way. It sounds like there's a lot of people who are interested in custom machines but can't handle the control board and software side, and we'd be willing to help you guys out. Just by show of hands, who's interested in an easy to use kit to build a machine?
A lot.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. So.
Yeah. Some of the things we're trying to figure out while here is while we can't we don't really have the least to mass produce thousands of these things, but as we're thinking about doing. Kits or instructions or something like that, helping out other people and doing custom machines, a few one-offs here and there designed for people. So we're really trying to gauge interest, like what people are most interested in, where do they need the most help, sorts of things you couldn't do yourself that you want that assistance with. So, do you want to buy a cabinet ready-made? Do you want to just have instructions for the cabinet and you have your own table saw at home where you can make it yourself? Or, the control boards, control software, which help you need there and those sorts of things. So if you're interested in this stuff, please come by and talk to us. As Jeff mentioned, we'll be by them. We'll hang around here for questions for a while, still out in the hall. And we'll also be by a machine tonight when the show floor opens up for as long as people are coming by.
I'm going to try to do it real quick, guys, for 1 second, but there's such interest in this, and I know Matt wants to check out very carefully so he can start a relationship with Jeff down the road here privately, but what I'm going to try to do is see if we can get Stevens, too. I'll check here real briefly, but if we can get Stevens, too, it's that room right next to the drugstore area. There's a separate room there, and maybe we can put that machine in there, and then some of you guys can spend some private time in there instead of being in the commotion of the exhibit hall. So I'm going to shoot to have that machine put in that room at 5 o'clock, 5 to 6, so you guys can sit and really dissect and look at it carefully. So for all you early risers, you guys are going to be there, and everyone else is going to miss out. But Alex, any more questions here?
No, it actually runs bare metal on the micro. It's for a little few of the technical details. It's an Atmel AVR, Mega 16, 16K flash. So it uses a lot of techniques that we've previously used in a lot of our jobs and products. So it is running native on there. One of the things we're talking about is if we do, you know, go to the next generation and try to do more of these control boards, what we want in the next generation of software and how to extend that. Does it need a more powerful processor or not? So one of the biggest things we're wondering about is, you know, to make it easy for other people to customize the games. You know, a lot of the people out here, I suspect, probably don't know how to really program in C or assembly language or anything like that. So we're talking about doing like maybe a script sort of interface where you kind of just say, hey, I have a set of bank of drop targets here, and it has these connections connected to these IOs, and I want it to work in this basic manner to make it easy to do. But as it currently exists, it's all written in C. It kind of uses a bunch of, you know, software timers that drive the different effects, the solenoids and the lamps and all those sorts of things. And it's basically reactive driven from all the switches.
Yeah, so to sort of emphasize what Lee's saying here, I think we're using about 80% of 16K program space, about 70% of the RAM space, which I think is 512 bytes or something. So this isn't an embedded Windows system or something, right?
Yeah, it's a very lightweight system. The entire source code is maybe 3,000 lines or so.
So I think we're out of time. So if you guys want to come by and...
We have a special announcement. Stevens 2 is available, so it's a done deal. 5 o'clock tonight. Okay, buddy?
Okay.
Matt, I'm going to have you be the MC for this event. But it'll be fun to have someone like yourself there just to kind of, you know, as he's explaining what he did and show things, you know, you can do the comparisons of what it is on a more professional level. And I think it'll be fun for you, too.
Yep.
Hey, buddy, thanks so much. Both of you guys are coming down.